Hello? Okay, I think that's plenty loud. Yeah, my name is Sam Johnson, and I am the parent of two children who attend Lowell School on Madison's east side. My son Joey is in fifth grade, and my daughter Kate is in second grade. What led me to seek a position on the Madison School Board was frustration in two areas. One was approximately a year ago, the ultimatum presented to the taxpayers of having a referendum or having services cut for children. That didn't sit well with me, and I felt that there had to have been alternatives prior to that that could have avoided that situation. Another reason for me that led me to this spot was my dissatisfaction with the process where there weren't any choices for candidates. And I started to complain to people and about the lack of choices, and I kind of walked myself into this position. I was asked by the former president of the Madison School Board, Nancy Harper, to run, and I accepted. And I hope to push for a fiscal responsibility so that we can provide the a good quality education within the budget. And I would like at all costs to avoid additional referendums and penalty hits to go above the cap of 33%. Feel is an undue hardship to the taxpayers, and especially senior citizens on fixed incomes who are homeowners. That's about all I got. I don't know how much time that was, so.
That's a good time. I don't know if it would take us. You let me know when my 3 minutes starts. I don't know. Hello, my name is Shua Bang. I'm currently on the board, occupying seat number 3. And I have to say that it's been, personally for me, it's been an honor to been elected to serve the families and children who make up the Madison School District. It's since I've been on the board, I have to say I learned so much about curriculum, policies, and also the push and pulls of what makes the district run. As I learn more, I think that there are a couple of issues that this district has dealt with and will continue to deal with in the future. You know, we are a district that is one of the finest in the nation. Whether or not we wanted to keep it the same, I think it's a question that not the board, it's not a question for the board, but it's a question for the community. Since I've been on the board, we eliminated two programs that I value very much, and I think that makes a significant impact on how children learn. One is the Family Community Liaisons, which was proposed by the late Betty Franklin, who was the publisher of Madison Times. And the program served primarily African Americans and poor children. 2 years ago, that program was eliminated. Another program that I see as having a support impact on for support academics is the REACH program. In some schools, REACH was used for cultural arts, but primary purpose of REACH in a lot of schools was science and computers. Right now, the district has, no broad technology goals for the future. I think another issue that we continue to face is with decreasing financial support and increasing needs of our children, particularly our Latino children. And in a couple more months, we're going to be receiving some more Southeast Asian home students, refugees from Southeast Asia. So it's a question that I believe that not the board must answer, but also the community.
Hello, my name is Melanie Alvarez. I'm running for seat number 4. And several of you know me because I volunteered for several years at Bureau teaching math, and I taught several of your kids. And that was a wonderful opportunity as well as an enlightening experience. I learned how difficult it was to teach a class of 20 plus children at several different levels of learning. I also work at the university, and I assess the math skills of students there. Because of these two experiences, I became more involved with what was going on in schools and the curriculums that had been implemented and how well they work. I was appalled to find out 4 years ago that this district was implementing curriculums of which the least we can say of them is that they are controversial. I am particularly referring to the math curriculum and to the bilingual education curriculum. These programs have been implemented in other states before. They were controversial and never proved that they were successful. On the contrary, many parents actually believe that these programs failed them. In 1999, a letter sent to then Secretary of Education, Richard Riley, stated that these math programs do not provide the fundamental skills to develop a solid background in math and science. Now, with a bad curriculum, not only children are negatively affected, teachers are also affected, since they are the first ones to be blamed when our children are not learning. Teachers care about our children, and several have complained to me about these curriculums. I have seen many teachers supplementing and bending themselves over backwards trying to make these curriculums work. This takes their money, because they pay for supplementations, takes their time, and makes them less efficient as a teacher. Teachers and parents have complained to me that the Madison Metropolitan School District is not open to criticism. I'm also terribly concerned about the bilingual education program. It is typical of a culture of lower expectations towards the minorities. They want to be nice to us by not demanding much from our kids. The bilingual education curriculum only separates our children from others, creating Latino ghettos in schools. And the theory that it takes 7 years to become bilingual only creates second-class citizens with deficient English. And once again, at the time California was moving from bilingual education, Madison is starting to implement it here. We are the city that gives second chances to failing curriculums. Now, as a parent of Latino children and someone who has tutored Latino and African American children in mathematics, I know how the culture of lower expectations has unfairly affected many of these children's education and consequently their lives. I would like to promote a climate of individual recognition and assessment for all, and to eliminate the paternalistic stereotypes which exist in our schools. Now, my three main points are curriculum, choosing the best one, parents' involvement. I would like to destroy the myth that parents do not care and they do not want to be involved in the education process. This is not true. Many of us care, and our help is key in our children's progress. I want more frequent contact between teachers and parents, not just at the occasional parent-teacher conference. Now, teachers, I want the best prepared teachers to be hired by our schools. I would like an open forum where teachers can talk about experience and where they can and where we can learn from them. Thank you very much.
Take my time.
He agrees with me on everything.
The intro was
pretty good.
Yeah. Whenever you're ready.
Well, thanks, ready?
Yeah,
okay, you got to do a sign or something like that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
My name is Johnny Winston Jr., and I'm seeking to become elected to seat number 4 of the Madison Metropolitan School Board. That's soon to be vacated by retiring Ray Allen. I'm a longtime Madison resident who attended Madison schools and graduated from Madison West High School in 1986. Please don't hold that against me. I also have two teenage daughters that attend Madison schools, one at West High School and one at Work and Learn. Currently, I'm a firefighter for the city of Madison. However, I have a long history working with young people in this community. Some of my past professions include director of Vera Court Neighborhood Center, homeschool coordinator at Leopold Elementary School, and youth worker for the Neighborhood Intervention Program, just to name a few. My experience makes me a good candidate for the Madison School Board. I know it's really discouraging when you look at the newspaper and you see things like media headlines that show standardized test scores that are low and graduation rates that are very low for racial and ethnic minority students. It's disheartening to know that our community is losing the battle, the fundamental battle for the right to educate our students. Without education, these students face a greater challenges to attain upward advancement and economic security. These are the facts. Do not give up on this school district. I implore this community, don't give up on this school district. Our school district needs your help. They need leadership that's going to generate real solutions to real problems. As an elected member, I will provide oversight and accountability and support for teachers and students. I will be an active member of this board. And I'll be studying the information and all the issues that are around it. I will make decisions based on knowledge, not agenda. I will assist in helping develop policy that will help all of our students be successful in the Madison Metropolitan School District. I want to facilitate building relationships that link together groups that have not worked together before and to collaborate on addressing district-wide concerns. This includes building partnerships with our local university, colleges, business community, and not-for-profit groups working with our young people. Consistent with the focus of the school board, I want to see African-American students do well as all the other students in our school district, which is 24,888 of them. How do we do this? We do it together. In the spirit of working together, I pose some questions to this community. What are we doing to help students succeed in our district? Are you an involved parent? Do you go to your child's school and meet with teachers, especially when things are going well? This builds relationships and it's very needed for our community. Remember, everybody is in this community and everyone needs to get involved. Our students are very important. They are the future. And that's why I'm running for seat number 4 for the Madison Metropolitan School District School Board. Don't get discouraged, get involved. Thank you. Yeah, you can clap, sorry.
Okay, I'm Alex Olson. I'm running for seat 5. Recently, I realized that running for the Madison School Board would be a logical next step for me. I'm a detective with the Madison Police Department with over 22 years experience, including 11 on the South Side. I investigate homicide, armed robbery, and hate crimes. I've provided countless trainings to law enforcement, schools, and community groups about hate crimes, bigotry, and prejudice. I have volunteered with Mothers of Simpson Street and the Latino Support Network, coached girls soccer, been a member of First Unitarian Society's Social Justice Committee, and mentored a teenager in the coming of age class there. I was on the board of Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network for South Central Wisconsin, and I'm currently on the board at the Center for New Community in Chicago. I live with a speech pathologist from another school district and have learned from her many of the realities and issues facing special ed teachers and students. I actually think my job is a lot easier. I grew up in Japan and the Philippines as well as New England and have traveled extensively seeking to learn from many different cultures. It's clear to me that education is essential for knowledge, success, better learning conditions, economic parity, and equity for everyone. I would bring skills of communication, collaborative community work, consensus building, and a passion for social justice to the district and community, especially those communities which have been struggling on the margins for too long. I want to be an advocate for students and parents who have problems with Madison's public education system, as well as for those who don't. I want the schools and the board to be as accessible as possible for all. I believe the business of the board should involve input from any person in the district who is willing, including parents, community, students, teachers, staff, administrators, businesses, and unions. Goals that are set and decisions that are made should be as public as possible. Learning only happens when schools are safe and welcoming for all. Madison schools must model this approach so that no child is left behind, in the good sense of that phrase. Safety issues must reflect both physical safety from weapons, drugs, and fights, and emotional safety, which results from a positive school climate for everyone, regardless of who they are. There are many people who have been working long and hard on issues like academic achievement gaps and high dropout suspension and expulsion rates. I want to publicly acknowledge their dedication and energy in tackling those issues head on. I would look forward to working with them to contribute constructive progress in these areas. I believe that a decade of revenue caps for schools is more than enough. Improved efficiencies alone will not be adequate to deliver the high educational services that Madison demands from its schools. MMSD teachers deserve to be fairly compensated for the hard work they do. I would fight to ensure that the state and federal governments pay their fair share towards public education. Loopholes exempting some businesses and corporations from paying property taxes must be closed. I hope that Governor Doyle's Task Force on Education addresses these financial issues and holds the wider conversation of restoring Wisconsin's historical commitment to providing quality public education for all students, because that is my bottom line. Thank you.
Go. Thank you. I'm Ruth Robarts. I'm happy to be here at Cherokee again. My daughter went to Thoreau, Cherokee, and West, and I got to say, it's a particular pleasure to be back here and to not be, you know, a cookie mom for the eighth grade dance, which is what I remember as my last major event here. I'm here to ask you for your support for one more term on the Madison School Board for three reasons. The first one is, I think I bring you the kind of experience and diverse background that is helpful when a district faces the kinds of challenges that we face today. I've given 17 years of my adult life to the Madison schools, 10 as a student teacher, teacher and principal at Malcolm Shabazz City High School in work and learning, 7 in a month or so on the Madison School Board, and 12 as a mom. We can add those month of things, but 12 as the mom of a daughter who came through here. I have a master's degree in admin from the UW, which is helpful to me in thinking about ways to evaluate staff and programs. I'm a labor attorney with a lengthy history in on both sides of the table as labor and as management. And my day job at the University Law School is also in education, where in addition to working with law students, I work with some of our high school and middle school students in the pupil program. What I think this offers you is somebody who can look at issues as they arise from a variety of perspectives. Second, I think I share the vision that Madison has for its public schools, and that's a very broad vision. We, in many ways, want it all. The educator John Dewey once said that we must want for all children what a good and wise parent wants for his child, because anything less is unlovely and it undermines our democracy. And I think that's the kind of community we are. We want for every child the education that develops that child to his or her potential, full potential. We want a firm foundation for productive adults, and that means a lot of things to us. It means math, science, social studies, reading, but it also means competitive sports, math competitions, fine arts, and that range of things that engage kids in very, very important ways. And finally, I believe I've demonstrated a commitment to accountability. When I first ran for office, Becky Young told me an important thing. You're going to run for office because you love kids and public education, but what you're going to do all the time is the budget. And that's right, and there's a reason that's right, because the budget is where we show and set our priorities. And I'll have more to say about that during questions and answers.
Thank you to all of you candidates. You've done a very good job of introducing yourself. And I was remiss in introducing myself and also the folks who are hosting this event this evening. I'm Claire McArdle. I'm with the League of Women Voters of Dane County, and we are moderating forums all over the county, actually, for school board and the other electoral positions that are being voted on this spring. I would also like to give a thank you to Vicki Franchino, Cherokee PTO co-president, who has organized this event this evening, and I believe there are about 5 or 6 other schools that were also invited, is that correct? So a nice turnout, and with that, we'll get underway with some of the questions. Is there anyone who would like to speak to the mic with your question first? All right, otherwise, Rose Syme, also with the League of Women Voters, is starting these so that we don't ask the same question over and over. And I'll start with this one. Okay. This is a personal question. My son's wallet, watch, and personal possessions were stolen from his locker in 2002-2003. I was negatively surprised at how theft and more serious crimes are dealt with by the schools. How would you change policy? And I think I'll start with Johnny. At Johnny, then Melina, and down that way, and then over here. Melania.
Melania.
Sorry, I'll get it. Oh, and for this, you have 1 minute to respond.
Okay.
No, because the credits—they're not coming from. Okay,
no. Got to get those rules straight.
Yeah.
Speaking of rules, that's what we have. We have a code of conduct for the Madison Metropolitan School District. I believe that our code of conduct—we need to look at that very seriously. I think that there are some circumstances that young people face in our community, and I do not advocate stealing of any type or any other kind of violence against young people, but at the same time, I think punishments have to fit the crime. And if it doesn't, then we need to take a very hard look at those kind of things within our district. And again, I believe in the code of conduct. I believe that they're very important, but we need to have a code of conduct that is warranted for the issue that young people face.
What I will do is, we have to first educate our children and to know what are their expectations. I think that, for example, something that Margaret Planner did at Peru Elementary, to have small groups for kindergarten and first grade and set the ground and set the rules, is a wonderful idea. But at the same time, when a child failed and a child had a problem, you know, there was some tolerance and they could help the child and they could make him understand. I think parents should also be involved, and parents should be the ultimate, the ones that should be responsible for the children's behavior. And if the child does not behave, I think the parents should you know, remove the child from the school, basically. But zero tolerance is never the right thing to do. We have to work with the children to teach them how to behave in society.
You know, as a parent and as a person who has worked for most of my life with children, sitting on the board, there are cases that come before the board where we treat children like young adults, and I do not agree with that. I think that having children of my own, we need to look at each case individually, taking the circumstances. And as a district, we need to give teachers and principals the flexibility to address issues in schools. I do not support a broad policy where everybody is treated the same. I think that's wrong.
I think this situation would be a good thing for people to look at their principals for. I think this is something that principals should be judged on, and I think that there should be a latitude. I would like to see principals, strong principals in the Madison Public School system, and they should have latitude. I also don't agree with zero tolerance policies. The example of the boy bringing a plastic knife to school and was suspended or expelled, and took him like a year to get back into school, comes to mind, because there was a zero tolerance for knives and it was a simple mistake. So I think these are the areas that you want to look towards your principal You want to see how they respond, and you want to judge them by that and hold them accountable.
Sure. I think one of the things we're seeing here at Cherokee is the success of discipline systems that have clear rules, clear consequences, and you know, fairly concrete, quick sequences. We always have to balance that with enough due process to ensure that kids do not get falsely accused at school. My overall vision in this area is for us to use more of the environmental kinds of changes, the small school approach, restorative justice kinds of ideas, so that that kid who stole the wallet knows that's the wrong thing to do, but has a way to work him or herself back into the community and regain respect from the classmates.
First of all, to whoever wrote that question, let me say I'm sorry that that happened to your child in a public school setting. It's not anything that any one of us would want to have happen to a child in any setting at all, especially not in a place where the child is coming to learn and doesn't necessarily need to feel that they're going to be a victim of a crime. I'm going to have to agree at this point somewhat with my esteemed opponent. Because I also feel that we need to have a very consistent approach from all schools on issues of discipline, on issues of criminal activity. Part of the problem that I see as a police person is that some of the schools treat problems very differently from other schools, and so there is inconsistent treatment of issues that occur in those schools. So I think consistency and unbiased approaches for all students is really key, so that some students don't feel that they can get away with things and other students feel they're being unfairly penalized. I also would support restorative justice, conflict and mediation teams within the schools as well.
All right, good answers all. Here's another question that's on a little different topic, and that is the problem of overcrowding, or how do we ever work out the population problems in the different parts of the city. The question is, there's a tremendous growth and development on the southwest side. In a couple of years, Leopold and Chavez elementary schools are expected to be over capacity. What are your thoughts on dealing with overcrowding in some of our schools? Would you like to start that one, too?
Sure. Having served for many, many, many months, the last on the committees and on public hearings with some of you, when we looked at the elementary school and middle school populations, particularly on the southwest side, one of the conclusions I come to is that in the case of Leopold, which is the one school whose even short-run problems were not thoroughly addressed during that last round, we're going to need a referendum to build another freestanding school, you know, basically a pairing of schools there. That would take significant pressure off this whole area and go a long way towards preventing the creation of a Leopold that is primarily low and middle low income and students of color, and you know, and another school right next to it that is primarily white and upper income.
I think that overcrowding in schools is probably one of the main problems that we're going to be seeing more of in the future. I think that we are going to have to, as a community and a school, as school parents and administrators, come up with creative solutions for that, because it's not just going to be that we need one referendum. Eventually we're going to need either multiple referenda, or we're going to need other ways to solve this problem. I don't know whether the school district can look at redistricting, so that some schools are not left with more population and other schools left with less population. If I am elected to the board, I seriously will take this problem on, because I think it's only going to increase in the future as more people move to Madison to take advantage of our excellent public education system here.
All right. No, we'll just go down the line.
I've been in Madison a very long time, and one thing that I do know about this community is that we build things. If you think about it, the Overture Foundation, there's no money. Here it comes downtown. There's no money for anything, but here goes the Monona Terrace. There's no money, but Camp Randall's getting renovated. One thing we do again in this community is we build. And the only unfortunate thing about that is we can build, but we can't staff. And that's the ultimate problem. But when we're talking about building, we're talking about growth. And we're talking about growing in different communities, and we have different housing developments that are going up. I think that's wonderful. It's wonderful for our city, and develops a tax base so that our young people can have the things that they need in their schools.
I think that as a district, we have to take the responsibility. If we need to build more schools, we'll have to do it. But also what happens is we're taking on other communities like Pittsburgh, which has not taken full responsibility of the growing population there. And it would be good that they actually start taking the responsibility of building schools and having their children in their own community.
I see the problem a little bit differently. I think that for one who's lived in Madison for 20 years, I'm glad that we're building more houses. Whether or not it's going to be affordable to some of our families, that's a question that the city is dealing with right now. In the future, my concern is not with just overcrowding one schools. I think we, as a community, have to realize the fact that with limited funding and increasing number of students, and if we don't get any more resources, larger class may be an option that the board may be presented with. So, I think that I'm all for building schools, but let's not segregate based on neighborhoods. Let's find a way to make our schools assimilate populations.
I think this is the problem that we're heading into right now. We just had one referendum that passed. We are possibly going to be looking at another referendum if we don't cut services by $9 million. And this is because we did not show the restraint needed to operate within a $307 million budget. The taxpayers are going to begin to lose their appetite for referendums. And when it comes time to build a building, because we absolutely have to have one, will the taxpayers be willing to do that? And I think that's the problem.
Melania, I'll ask you this question first, the first opportunity to answer. Mr. Johnson has just sort of led us into this question, which is, what are options other than a referendum for school financing?
Oops, sorry.
Well, there are different options about some programs. For example, Ruth was talking the other day about the sports, that perhaps we could get some sponsors for sports. That would reduce also the amount of money we spend that. We should also look into administration. There are a lot of positions there that keep on growing, and every time the Madison Metropolitan Schools District Administration, and every time they offer to cut someone, they offer to cut the teachers, and they offer to cut the nice programs we want, but they don't offer to cut the administration. That would be another place where we can cut costs. So sponsoring perhaps some activities that children do after school, that could be a way to do it.
Go down.
I think there's always options for this community. The options for us, as I see it, is we could eliminate a lot of programs. Sports could go, as this is not required. A lot of others, a supportive program to go. Maybe it's trains, maybe after school ropes course. A lot of, you know, we could maybe put another year on moratorium on purchasing new textbooks for our children, increase class size. Those are things that can save money. But I think ultimately, this district has to make a decision on what type of schools system we want in Madison.
February 1st has come and gone, and there was no action by the board to look at administration on potentially downsizing or consolidation administration. I think that represents a failure of leadership by the school board. I think the purpose of the Madison school system is to provide as many services to children as possible, and I would be very reluctant to cut services to kids. And I would ask first for the administration to consolidate and have the school board make those tough decisions of fiscal restraint.
I definitely think we should not be in the situation we're in right now, where we seem to be looking at either another referendum or layoffs, which, if you're going to hit the $9 million mark, would be something like 180, 200 teachers. That's unacceptable. That would have a terrible impact on student-teacher ratios. What options we have, somebody already mentioned it, we should have put all of our administrators on one-year contracts so we could systematically evaluate what needs to be done a year from now. We didn't do that, so we're now 2 years from being able to do that. We have projects we can defer. We need to go to the community very directly and say, we need the money from you to continue competitive sports. Right now we're spending, well, here's a good example, $1.5 million subsidizing competitive sports, which is a wonderful thing and very good for kids, but we're also freezing textbooks, can't afford recess in the elementary schools, can't afford an elementary school day that's long enough, can't afford the software and hardware we need for some of the reading programs. There's something out of whack here.
I think that school funding needs to be determined by pupil needs, not political considerations. I think school financing formula should be based on the actual cost of providing a sound basic education. Revenue should be generated in a fair manner that protects taxpayers and promotes equity for all students. Revenue that we need should be coming from state and federal governments. They should be paying what they said they were going to pay to our school district over the years and have never achieved paying for us, and they should pay for the programs that they mandate us to do. I will work to the best of my ability to prevent any of the financial crisis that seems to be looming from impacting students and classroom instruction, because that's why we're here. That's what schools are all about. I think that as a stopgap measure, we might want to think about partnering with business communities for financial partnerships for sports programs or other programs in the district. But I really think that another place that we need to look at to start making cuts or possible cuts would be management. There must be some fat somewhere that we can excise from this whole process so that the kids and the teachers don't end up suffering.
Well, my basketball coach used to have this saying, he said, it's amazing what can be accomplished when no one cares who receives the credit. And that always stuck real clear with me when we start talking about our school district. We need to start talking about partnerships, and I definitely agree with what Ruth and Alex both said. We need to look at partnerships with our business community, partnerships with MATC, the university, Edgewood College, and also agencies that work with youth. What do I mean by that? There's a lot of a lot of services that can be rendered from different agencies, but if they're coming to the school to provide that service, is that okay and supported by us? I think that's wonderful. Again, that's partnership. I also need to think that, you know, I think we need to evaluate our programs. And the programs that are doing well, they need to be funded. And the programs that aren't doing so well, well, you know, maybe we need to look at those very closely. We need to have measurable program, measurable goals with measurable outcomes with them. Thank you.
We've been dealing with questions mostly about budget. There are quite a few questions about curriculum specifically. So I'm going to ask if Schwa would start with this question. Who should be involved in developing curriculum? And what role should parents and the community play?
It's a tough question for me because I have tremendous respect for people who spend their lives studying issues regarding education. And as an outsider, coming into issues, you know, there as a board member, you make policies that go across the district. I believe in parents' involvement, community involvement, but I also believe in that if we work together, we have to learn to trust each other. I do not believe in splitting communities, pitting people against another. Whether or not one curriculum is better than another, you know, ESL is a great example. For many years, the district practiced ESL, and then they came in and changed it to bilingual, and now seems we're moving into some other things for both the Latinos and Southeast Asian populations. I believe that the district should be open, that people who have specialties in a particular area needs to be listened to, and the community should be involved.
I would like to see teachers have greater freedom to choose the type of curriculum they feel like they can teach best from. And I would like to have there be a greater freedom within public schools for parents to gravitate towards the curriculum that they would like to have their kids be taught. And I think the Madison Public Schools system is big enough to accommodate the needs of everyone and the different needs that everyone has. So I would like to see, and I feel like one of the solutions to some of these problems is just greater freedom within the school district, both for teachers to choose their curriculum and for parents to gravitate towards the curriculum that they would like their children taught.
Under state law, it's the board's responsibility to adopt and review and readopt curriculum across the board. The role for parents is, I think, a little, you know, first and foremost, to tell us what you think is going on in the schools. But overall, most of this comes down to the role of the administration. And it's a professional role, much like doctors and lawyers and all the rest of us have, which is to take the very complex issues of which programs are better and which kids they're better with and why, and put that out to the community in a way that's intelligible and accessible, and you could help us participate in making both the economic and the curriculum choices. I think we, as a board and the administration, fail you to a large degree in that regard. We treat this like it's a very esoteric thing. Again, I have my Ed Med degree. We didn't learn rocket science about evaluating programs. If we can't make it intelligible, we can't expect your support, and we can't expect you to share our evaluations of programs.
Well, I think that most of the work of developing curriculum and the specifics of content of curriculum should be left to teachers and administrators who have that expertise and knowledge base. I also agree that both students and parents should have their wishes heard by the school board and by people responsible for curriculum and have those wishes included as much as possible. There should be district-wide curriculum standards, I think, with implementation by local schools to customize the curriculum to their own creative approaches. One thing I had thought of was having a curriculum interwoven from elementary through high school that deals with bigotry and hatred and prejudice that's woven throughout all of the curriculum, so it's not just a separate class necessarily, but something that we deal with on a daily basis throughout the school day for all students and teachers as well.
Well, one thing that I'll tell people here is that, you know, I'm not a teacher, but I do feel that I'm an educator, and I do feel that it's just really important that the board is very diverse in its approach. And we have some people on our board right now that have some very good, keen knowledge of curriculum. We also have very good people that are part of the community. But in terms of when I look at what a school board does, I just kind of go back to, I listen to what the community wants. It's not what I want. Something that's important to me may not be important to the community. And I think that's the important role of the board, is to listen and to provide the education for our young people. And it's also very important that, you know, we're taking into account all the state standards that we have to utilize. And we also need to look at different approaches on how we do our curriculum. Because I don't think that it's really fair to have young people, particularly with our mobility rate, to go to one side of town to another and then have different curriculums.
As Ruth said, the responsibility of the curriculum is the board, the school board. And there's a reason for it. The school board is responsible to see that the Madison Metropolitan School District and the teachers, you know, have gone through all the curriculums and they actually chose the best, and there's balance and fair. And what happened with the school board is that lately they have been allowing the Madison Metropolitan School District to choose curriculums. There is the problem when just, you know, a specific branch, or like in this case, the district chooses the curriculum, because there could be specific agendas, like in the case of the math curriculum here. In this case, the School of Education wanted this math curriculum implemented in our district, and there's a problem, and they are not listening to parents, they are not listening to teachers, and there are many people that are upset with it. So it is the responsibility to see that also parents and teachers are listened to if there's something that people don't agree with the Madison Metropolitan School District, like this is the case.
Staying with the curriculum question, this one gets a little bit deeper. A big reason for U.S. underperformance relative to other countries is overemphasis on teaching methods at the expense of subject matter knowledge. Do you recognize this as a problem in the education of teachers, and can the board do something about it? We'll start with you, Mr. Johnson.
I don't even think I understand that question. The methods against content?
Correct.
I think that you want to look for results, and the curriculum area is definitely not something I feel comfortable with, and I would defer to a lot of other expertise advice. This would be an area that I would, you know, learn immediately from the very get-go. But my parents were both educators. My dad has a PhD in education. And I probably would, start with them, but I would go in with open ears.
All right.
Well, I think the national and international research on this topic makes it very clear that this question is right on target in terms of studies that have been able to show the more a teacher has expertise in the subject matter, such as math or science, the more that person seems to be able to deliver it, as opposed to the kind of training that we in general get, which is very heavy on how to manage a class, or I was a social studies teacher, this one versus that one. There's some limits to what we can do with that directly, because you have certification requirements that favor the status quo, you have schools of ed that favor the status quo that do it in a certain way. We do make a commitment in Madison to professional development for teachers, not as big as we would like, but growing, and I think that's something that I will continue to support, because it is so critical that we know our subject matter very well. So it's to engage students, you know, from a variety of viewpoints, and rather than say, you know, we're now in the Civil War 1865, you know, turn to the next page. Thank you.
I'm leery of one direction that I see our curriculum going, and that's standardization and teachers having to teach to standardized tests only. My sister-in-law is a biology teacher in the Bronx, and that's all she does is teach to the region's standard tests. And so the content of the teaching is almost completely academic without any sort of focus on students' learning styles or abilities in the classroom. And I think that there has to be some kind of balance. Yes, I want teachers to know what their subject matter is and to teach the kids about the subject matter in a way that engages them and gets them to learn and gets them to really know the knowledge and the material, so it's not just a matter of cramming for a test and then spewing it out. But I think the teacher also has to talk, or has to be aware of the different learning styles in his or her classroom and teach to those abilities as well.
Well, I think we can all agree in here with education that it's not one size fits all. Every student is not learn the same way. Every student is not taught the same way either. There are students that are very gifted academically, and there are students that aren't so gifted academically. But those same students, some of those are gifted in other areas, and I think those need to be considered, such as the arts, such as other type of programs, maybe athletics, maybe poetry, and other types of programs. Maybe they're very good with their hands. But I go back to the DPI model, and school is much more than A's, B's, and C's. They're also connecting family, school, and work, solving problems, understanding diversity and inclusiveness and fairness, working in groups, managing conflicts, integrating growth, development, making decisions, and also setting and achieving goals. You can't get that in a standardized test, because you know our new No Child Left Behind is just No Child Left Untested.
Well, subject matter is important. It's important that our children learn the subject well. There are expectations for the children, and what we want for our children is to learn the most they can for the subject. So when they have go to university and they have to choose, they actually have open possibilities for them. So we need that the teacher knows the subject matter is important, that she knows it well is important, and it's much more important sometimes than methods, because those people can take children even further than anybody else. Methodology is important to a point, but knowledge is what really drives a teacher.
Again, as a parent, with the children in the district already, I want teachers who are knowledgeable about what they teach, but at the same time, I value a teacher who's able to teach my kid because he is different. And I value a teacher who's able to teach each child as though that child was unique. Is that something that can be learned? I think so. I agree with Alex that we have to seek a balance. Well, we have somebody who's extremely educated, knowledgeable on a subject, but cannot teach our children. I would not want somebody like that for any, either for my children or for the children of the district.
And this child probably doesn't know why. I don't believe in this. I think that a way of having the child not being left behind is you finish a subject with a teacher, the teacher grades a test, gives it to the child takes it to the parents, and if the child is not doing well, then the parents and the teacher and the child work with it, and then the child goes ahead. And this is the process that you go over and over and over throughout the years. And so then the child knows how he's performing, and then he will not be left behind, because the moment he's starting to be a little bit behind, the parents and the teachers are there and say, hey, you didn't do so well on this last test, let's work it out. And that's the way of taking a child by the hand and showing them what are the standards, what is expected from him, and we will not have a child who left behind.
Yeah, I don't believe in eradicating the child, the policy. I think that this policy has limits creativity, limits flexibility, shifts resources from one area to basically preparing for assessments. I think what this policy has done is exactly what it's not meant to do, is left more children behind than originally began with.
Well, I think the No Child Left Behind is something that is not in the control of the school board, nor of the teachers or the principals. It's something that they just have to deal with. And I know as a parent, I don't like hearing, well, we're not going to have any homework today because we have to get ready for this No Child Left Behind. Or we're not doing this because of this. And I don't like hearing excuses for not getting a lot of work done because of whatever reason that no one has any control over. There are kids right now that are being left behind, and I think we need to look at changes. And you look at low-income children and ethnic kids that have a divide there, an achievement gap, and those kids are being left behind, and we need to come up with solutions.
I think we all said that in some ways this act is a lot of hurdles and no extra money. That's a problem. It's a positive to me in the sense that it makes social promotion harder to do. We've had certainly more incentive to strengthen our summer programs to be sure that our students can go from 4th to 5th, 8th to 9th, and graduate from high school. In terms of tests, there are good tests, and their tests have different purposes. A diagnostic test, such as the pre-language and pre-math tests that we give, I think are very helpful to the individual child. The other kinds of tests, the state tests, are helpful to us as a district so long as we disaggregate that information and look at the different impacts or the different effectiveness of our teaching on low-income, middle-income, you know, kids of color, not kids of color. I have very mixed feelings personally about teaching to the test. I know all these theories about how it narrows you, and you certainly don't want your whole curriculum made up of that. But I came from a low-income family, and had they, in California, not taught to the test, I would not have done so well on the SAT and the California Achievement Test that were necessary for me to go to the next step. We need to balance it.
So you started that one, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
Excuse me, Chairman. The social promotion issue was not completely ignored. That was the first part of the question.
All right. So you would like to have a little more conversation about social promotion in the Madison system.
Yes.
All right.
Is it right here?
Yeah, let's start with Alex again.
Yeah, let's start with Alex.
The second part of the question.
Well, I'm sorry, but I don't understand what you mean by that.
Well, the previous question first asked each candidate to state their opinion on social promotions. Is it good? Is it bad? Did you get rid of it?
I still don't understand what you mean. What's social promotion? I don't know what that means. Just explain to me what you mean, and then I'll ask you a question.
Students promoted from one grade to the next when they haven't mastered the material.
Oh, okay. Thank you for clarifying that. I don't think that's good at all. I know of kids in another district who graduated from high school who cannot read. T- to me, that seems like the school has failed them. And for the school simply to promote them to get them out of the system so other kids can come up doesn't strike me as any sort of education. It strikes me as a complete sham. And so for those reasons, I am not in favor of it at all.
Go ahead. So to answer your question, and I'll be pretty brief here, I think it depends on the situation. I'm going to say that because I have a younger brother who just was a teacher in New Orleans, and he taught eighth grade, and he had 17-year-old eighth graders. I think that's far too old to be in a classroom full of middle schoolers. I also have a sister-in-law that used to work in the New York City public school system. Every single day was the ESL day. Children were coming from all over the globe. And I think every situation you have to look at separately, look at it differently. And I think you, again, just look at it as individuals. You have to look at these things as opposed to as a whole group.
I think that one of the main problems is that some children have figured out that they don't have to do anything at school and nothing happens to them, and that they will be promoted. And they're right. And they're absolutely right. And we have to change this, because I have talked to kids and say, hey, you're not going to go to the next grade. Oh, you know, my aunt knows how to work the system. Of course not. And it depends. And my mom's the one. And, you know, it will not happen to me. So there's a problem. You know, and I know that, and I know that the kids are aware of this. So we have to do something to really evaluate the children and to do something to work with them, to tell them that they have to work, that is part of it. How are we going to do this? Oh, I have plenty of ideas, but not enough time to tell you.
I had a sister who graduated from West High School. For many years she dealt with epileptic seizure. Right now, in minimum reading. And she graduated, received her diploma. I don't know if that's social promotion or not. I think I agree with Johnny that each individual needs to be treated individually. I do not believe in clumping all students into one group and expect them to meet a certain standard. I believe in meeting minimum standards, but whether or not everybody should meet that same standards, I believe that in a district with over 24,888. Thank you. We still need to look at each person, each child, and treat them as an individual. That's all I have to say.
I think when you see children that are getting in crisis academically and perhaps in their social life, I think you need to start to look at making changes in what they're doing. And I think the public schools need to have options, whether they're going to a different school or a magnet school or an old boys school or a high discipline school or something, that we need to do everything that we can. My sister also had her problems, ended up getting her GED. She did not graduate. She's very successful now and has moved on with her life. So I don't think it's the end of the world when children don't graduate, and I think there needs to be standards that need to be met in order to progress.
We have time for just one more question. All right, the time is 8:15, as far as I can tell. And
Ruth still needs to answer this question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll be quick. For a long time, we've looked pretty much to those studies that say retaining kids in grade is not a solution. You know, they get distressed, they drop out, they have negative experiences. Things like the No Child Left Behind Act do force us to look a little bit beyond that, and what you see then is it's not so much that retention per se is bad for kids, but repeating the things that didn't work last year is bad for kids. And so what we need to look for, and what we're encouraged to look for, is early effective interventions, things that give kids a strong sense that they do have to meet the standards, but that we're also there with summer school or weekend programs or whatever to help them bridge that gap.
There is one question here that I think we probably ought to give each person a chance to answer. And after that question, then we'll give each of them 2 minutes to sum up their platform. This question says, some districts look at banning controversial literature. How would you as a board member consider this issue if some community members want a particular book banned? John, we'll start with you.
Yeah.
Who asked that question?
I did.
Okay, well, Ruth, you can answer. What book is it?
I was just talking in generalities. You see it in the paper from time to time in communities around Wisconsin and other states, and I'm just curious how you board, or any of you as board members would deal with that situation.
Okay. Are these people going to read the book, too?
It's a book that's available in public libraries and school libraries.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, first of all, I'm going to read the book. Okay? That's, and I think, again, it's very important that as a board member in getting this material in front of me, I think it's very important that we have some knowledge of it. And, you know, again, without knowing what the book is, without knowing the context of what the situation that it's involved, I don't know how well I could really answer that question, except for to say that, you know, I would read the book and I would make my own judgments. At the same time, I would listen to the community. And if the community is saying they're very outraged by this book, and not just a few people now, I'm talking about a lot of people, and some people in the community are saying, yeah, we should have it, you know, then I have to go with my own gut feeling and my own guess knowledge and beliefs of the material. I don't believe in censorship. At the same time, I think young people are in a different situation here, and we need to protect them.
I agree. It depends on the book. It depends on the age of the children. It depends on the content, that these things, you know, that they are discussing this book or using this book for what. So it's on one, you know, book by book basis. I don't believe usually in censorship, but it also depends what kind of book it is and depends the age of the child.
I have kids who, my fourth grader are reading Harry Potter, and my sixth grader is reading Captain Underpants. But don't worry, they're doing academically fine. I think this issue deals with a philosophical stance. As a person, I do not believe in censorship. But I do believe, as a parent, in sitting down with my child to discuss a certain issue, and I believe in having that type of relationship with my child. If the book is in a public library, I trust that when my kids go to a library to check out books, that it's appropriate for him. For her, as a parent, I know what my child checks out. And if there is a book that's controversial, as a parent, I would want to discuss with him why he checked out that book and what he hoped to learn from it. But as a person, I do not believe in censorship.
I think an issue there that would be with are the parents informed on what the children are reading? And I think that would be a pretty important issue, and I think that would be something I would want to support, parents knowing what their children are reading. I would set the bar quite high on what is allowed. I think you'd have to look at extreme situations and things that are just completely inappropriate, a pornography type of thing, and things advocating clearly immoral behavior. But I think parental knowledge would be, in my opinion, okay, and that might be another controversy in and of itself, but I do think openness and a wide tolerance level is pretty important in that area.
Well, we've only gotten about halfway through.
Back here on the right side. I don't support bans, and I also am very uncomfortable with the idea that school board members collectively or individually ought to be the judges. As a young teacher and as a principal at Malcolm Shabazz, I had some interesting experiences when I invited in the United to talk about homosexuality and they gave out literature, or when our students wrote things, or once upon a time when I, as a principal, had inadvertently signed off on the purchase of The Joy of Sex to be used in a classroom, and I was immediately called down to the superintendent to justify this. What I learned from that is we have a fairly balanced approach. We do entrust a lot of this to our teachers. We're looking for, is it age appropriate? Does it fit in the curriculum? Do kids have other choices? Are we forcing this work or not? And some of those things are in place and I think work very well. I think the reason we don't have some of what you see in the news is that we give it primarily to the teachers and they do an excellent job.
I think that right now we're living in a very difficult age where suspicion and paranoia and things that don't fit the prescribed mold are looked on askance. And I think we have to be extremely careful with education in that regard. When people start talking about why this book or that book should be banned or is immoral or I don't want my kid reading this because, a lot of times I look beneath the surface of where those people are coming from and I try to find out what their political motivation is or what their moral leanings are. And a lot of times it comes down to their agenda, and I don't think that that's something that we can afford as a society to be imposing on anyone, especially children, who have the right to learn and to read and to develop their minds in a way that's creative and innovative and speaks to a lot of different approaches and subject materials.
We're at a decision point right now. It's almost 25 after 8 when we told you that we'd be through at 8:30. If there's something, someone in the audience who has an absolutely burning question that must be answered before these folks leave, we can do that and then take the 2 minutes. Is that all right with everyone? All right, go ahead. You want to come to the mic?
No, I have a lot of questions. my burning question, I think, speaks to two issues, the curriculum and the budget issue. And sometimes I feel like I'm supposed to be from Venus, but I'm really from the moon, because even though I've lived in Madison 18 years, I wonder why we're always looking to get money somehow. We're not looking to earn the money somehow. In other words, why don't we ever look to all of the assets that we have in this community and find out how to make money? Our extracurriculars are concerts. I've been to concerts at Wesley School that I'm at, and yet they don't even collect money at the door. Yeah. I have been to many school functions that I would happily have paid for, and yet nobody's taken any money.
There you go.
Why don't we try to make money instead of just looking to get some someplace?
There you go.
Also, if MSSD would look to hire some business executives, they could speak to what kind of curriculum they need because they have employees. They are looking to hire computer programmers in India rather than in the United States. And as we all know, the manufacturing jobs are going all over the rest of the world. So we need some business leaders involved in our education. And I want some of them sitting down at MMSD
and your question
trying
is
to make decisions. And why, how can we do this?
How can
why haven't we and how can we?
Partnerships.
Partnerships with the...
All right, you start, then each person gets...
Again, in my literature right here, in black and white, it says create partnerships. And again, we're looking at a situation in terms of our education. We're in a crisis mode here. And what do people spend a lot of their money on? Entertainment, different things like that. And you're right, we do need to look at our own community. Going to referendum every year is not going to be the answer, absolutely not. But at the same time, people who do have children that are involved in sports and other extracurricular activities, I think would be more than willing to pay money and maybe even raise those fees just a little bit. You're absolutely right. And again, it's in the black and white right here. We've got to solve these problems, but we can't do it alone. We've got to do it together. Thank you very much for that.
As I stated, we have to look into the community to support sports, to support several activities, extracurricular activities. And you're absolutely right. We also need to look at the needs of the community. There are many businessmen that are telling me that they don't get the people that they need. Why they are not getting the people that we need? Why we don't? They say, well, there are many kids that they don't know how to make change. There are many kids that, you know, I need programmers. I need... Why we're not supplying our own people in this country?
I do support partnerships, but I would caution whether or not what type of partnerships can we have with the business community. Would we allow our children to be exposed to outside influences, and how much outside influences, particularly from very powerful businesses, do we want on the district? Those are questions that I think that we need to answer. You may remember a while back, the board voted to oust the Pepsi contract because there was too much advertising in the schools. In terms of the business, hiring business people in the schools or business to lead the schools, I believe that a school is run differently than a business. I do not believe that the children's classrooms and teachers can be treated as regular employees. So that's where I stand.
I think you're onto a really good idea there, and I kind of look at it from the point of view of how do we keep our costs down. And I'm thinking about putting our high school kids to work the next time there's landscaping going on at the schools, rather than, you know, having it done for X amount of dollars. Or the next time there's some construction. Wouldn't these kids love to learn skills and lower our costs at the same time? I think that's just win-win. But there are a lot of little hurdles to clear, but it would be nice if we could work out a system like that.
I think that your question is very well taken. I wonder, though, how much more money we could actually get by charging admission to concerts, for instance. We're talking at a budget that's $300 million, and I'm not sure that doing something on that smaller scale that you're talking about would actually make much of an impact. I agree with my other colleagues that I think partnerships are very important, but I'm pretty leery of privatizing or corporatizing public education in America. So I think that there might be some issues that we could look at where we could find people who were helpful from a business perspective, but I would be very hesitant indeed to turn over public education to a business or a corporation that would then privatize it and essentially start asking us to pay for it even more.
I agree with you on things like, you know, fees, tickets, whatever. We could take a little bit more. I don't think that's most of what we need to achieve here. We talk every year, and I think one of the problems we have right now this year with the budget is we talked last year about more partnerships in the community for fine arts, more partnerships for sports. We did not make that a budget goal for the board. We did not require that of the administration, and it has not happened. I think this community, I mean, that's exactly what I think in terms of our budget. The community needs to know that in the process we do have, we are trading off, we are freezing textbook buying, you know, can't pay for recess, all those things, while not taking $1.5 million of competitive sports to the community in terms of tickets or business subsidies or whatever it needs to be. Kids need competitive sports, but they don't, in my opinion, need them more than textbooks or some of the fundamental things like a longer elementary day.
All right, so I think we've come to a conclusion of questions from the audience. Each person running for school board now will have 2 minutes to sum up their position. And we started with Mr. Johnson last time, so I think we'll start at this end with Ruth and go down the line.
Okay, I want to thank you again for coming, being patient, and having some very challenging questions. I'd like to conclude by saying the most important thing to me in this campaign is to look for ways for us to be more representative and to have more of a sense in the community that we are accountable to you. We need to be united because state and federal laws are not fair to public education. We need to be united because the city and counties have us paying for things that belong to them, like police and nursing. We need to be united because we will need to build buildings, and buildings cost new money. And to me, a lot of what stands between us and being, you know, thoroughly, you know, in as best community agreement as we can, is the budget process. This $305 million budget that goes up $12-13 million every year, where the administration makes choices up to about 90% of it, and then the board and the community talk about the other 10%. And that's the point at which we are trading things off each other. You know, is it wrestling? Is it violin for Hmong children at Randall School? You know, is it this little program? Is it that little program? Without having brought to you in a good, understandable way, what are, you know, the big programs costing? What are the most effective? Of all the things we do for the minority student achievement gap, which things are really working more? Which things do we need to discontinue? Until you feel like we're making informed choices and you can participate in those and you can support those, I think we're going to have some real difficulties getting from one budget year to the other, let alone taking on the state and feds, who think of lots of things for us to do but don't like to pay for them, and the city and county, who want safe schools and good nursing but keep cutting their staffs for those kinds of things. Again, we're a community that values education, values public education. I hope to contribute to our continuing to be as effective as possible.
I'd also like to thank you for coming tonight and thank Vicki for organizing this at Cherokee. I'm a neophyte to the political arena, as people know, and I'm very excited to be a part of this school board race. I think that it's extremely important that the school board and the school administration are able to function well together and function together with the community as well as with their employees. I don't think that we can afford to have a school district where we're at odds with one another over various different issues, because there's too much at stake. And what's really at stake here is the education of our children, not just the children who are in schools right now, but children who will be continuing through our education system in the future. Our country is going to be depending on those children to run the country in the future. And if we don't give them the focus and the foundation and education that they need and deserve, then our country is going to be worse off in many ways than it already is in terms of leadership and strength and ethics and morality for people. I would hope to be able to serve in the capacity of a school board person who is very involved in and believes in inclusivity of all students in our school systems. I think that we owe it to our students to give them a quality education, no matter who they are, no matter what they look like, no matter what culture or what background they're from. I think the school district is doing a good job in that regard, but I really think that we can do a whole lot better
in making schools welcoming and safe places for all students and teachers and staff. So I hope to end on that positive note, and I'll pass the microphone.
Well, I too want to say thank you very much to Vicki. Thank you for hosting this event and doing a great job. And hopefully we didn't throw you too off guard, since we were supposed to do this last Tuesday. But thank you very much. I also want to thank everyone here this evening. It's just very important that you understand that I grew up here in this community. And I went to kindergarten through 12th grade, went to these schools. I'm proud to say that I went to Madison Metropolitan School District. A lot of people out there that are doubtful, they're doubting and things like that. And we got to start changing some of those things. We got to change some attitudes. We got to change the attitudes of some of our young people out there, some of our people in the community. I think I'm the person that can do that. Since announcing my candidacy, I've gone to 43 out of the 46 schools. Just gone in, soaking up the culture, checking out what's going on. I see a lot of good things happening in our school district, but unfortunately those things don't get the front page of the newspaper. It's all those negative things. Don't believe it. There's really good things happening in our schools, and we've got to get behind it. We really do. Some of you have the option. You can take your kids and you can go to a private school. You can take your whole family and move to another community. Some people don't have that kind of option. I've been talking for a while, and I wish I had more of a chance to listen to what you had to say, because I'm not running in this election to have a driving issue. I just want to be a leader. There's young people out there that are going to turn on their televisions on Monday nights, and they're going to see seven people up there making decisions that affect them. And I used to do that too when I was a young person. Kwame Salter was the coolest guy I ever knew. He was the president of the school board. One day he came in, he said, well, we cut after school sports, we cut Saturday recreation. We said, why? He said, because we had a choice to make, either classroom or Saturday recreation. And it had to be the classroom. But at least we knew, because then we went out with our basketball and we played ball. Thank you.
I'd like to thank all the organizers for inviting us here. I'd like to thank you also for being here. One of the main reasons why I entered this race is because I'm worried about curriculum, and I'm worried about what our children are learning or not learning in school. Curriculum is the core of what's going on in schools, is what our children are learning or not learning, and that's one of the main purposes of our schools. And I am worried about the math curriculum, I am worried about bilingual education curriculum, and every time I call the Madison Metropolitan School District, they're also changing curriculum. Did you know that they're changing the social science curriculum also now? So we're having new social science curriculum. It is important to look into this, and that's why I'm running. I want you not to take my word for it. Go and see what's going on. Go see how controversial these curriculums are. There are many things, good things going on, but we want those things to keep on going on, and we want this to be a very good, highly academic school district with all the other things. We worried about buildings, we worried about extracurricular activities, we worried about all that stuff. But if our children don't learn how to do math, if our children don't learn how to read, then everything else is a shell. And we have to work on this. Now, there's information that you can look at several websites at www.mathematicallycorrect, so that you know what I'm talking about math. There are also several websites about bilingual education in California. And this is important because I also think that Latinos deserve a right to have the same level of education as everybody else. I want education for all, and that's why I'm here. But I want everybody to have an opportunity, so when they go to the university or they go anywhere they want to go, they actually have the tools to be there and to take the chances.
Like my colleagues, I also want to thank everybody for coming here tonight, and I want to thank my wife who's at home, but my children. I asked her to be here tonight, but she cannot. I want to say that I grew up in Southeast Asia. I went to school on the dirt floor, thatch roof, through refugee camps for 4 years, dirt floor, tin roof. And when I came here, my mother was in AFDC. Pulled myself through the Madison School District. So I have nothing but admiration for those people who run this district, from board members and aspiring board members. I think it's a tough job, but I have to say that as a parent, I would trust my children's education to anybody in the district and also any board. I think that as a district, it's a fact that we're going to face a lot of tough choices in the future. What kind of district do we want? What kind of community do we want? And I think that time and again, this community has supported the truth that we want the best for our children. My children is not only my children, but it's also your children. Because when they grow up, they're going to be hopefully like me, who's going to grow up in this community, who's going to become involved, who's going to become educated, who's going to contribute back to the community that has allowed them the opportunity. And, you know, again, I want to thank everybody for coming here. I have a lot of admiration for both administrators, teachers, and parents who are a part of this district.
Thank you, Vicki, for inviting me. I feel like it's been an honor to be a candidate and be part of the political process. It's been very exciting for me. And I'd like to encourage other people to try this out. It's pretty exciting. But we are looking at a second year of the same types of choices, cutting children's services, and or having a referendum. And I think this goes to that the school board has ceded its authority to administration and has not had a leadership role. And I think I would like the school board to recapture its leadership position. And I feel that there's a great untapped potential of our children. And I would like to see our kids get the best education, and I would like Madison to be the best in the state as well as the rest of the country, and I don't see any reason why we can't be. Thank you.
Let's give everyone a round of applause.